This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, our hour of old-time crime begins with the adventures of Philip Marlowe. We'll hear The High-Collared Cape, his story from April 25th, 1950. After that, it's Sherlock Holmes and the Viennese Strangler. That episode aired April 9th, 1945.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. Those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. This time a nervous breakdown in a driving rain. A cape with a high collar and a tiny sliver of glass led me from the ballet and a beautiful dancer to the edge of a cliff and death. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The High-Collared Cape.
Nothing like a drink and a good book on a rainy night. And what a night. Oh, no. All right. Don't sprain your finger.
I'm most sorry to intrude on you this time at night, but I may have waited too long already.
Yeah, well, look, miss, my office hours are 9
poor to... My Andre, I felt something dreadful was going to happen to him, and now I'm sure of it. You must find him for me, the poor
lady,
man.
Lady, wait a minute. Hold it, will you? Who is Andre? And for that matter, who are you?
I am Vivian Ortway, prima ballerina, Ballet du Monde.
Prima ballerina?
The impresario of the company, my dear, dear old friend, my teacher, the man who's been like a father to me. That is Andre. Andre Ledoux. We must help him at once.
Yeah, well, listen, Miss Ortway, why don't you...
Mr. Marlowe, I feared for some time that Andre was on the brink of losing his mind.
Yeah, I can understand it.
Tormented by a thousand frustrations, he will never dance. He is crippled, but he is consumed with a passion for dancing and drives himself to express his genius through the clumsy feet of water.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting. You've no idea, but I don't see why you came to me tonight, Miss Ordway. What can I do?
Help me to find him. Yesterday, so something else happened to Andre. I don't know what, but it upset him. Then today at noon, when this awful rain started, he disappeared. And, oh, good heavens.
Huh?
8:05.
Yeah, what about it?
I'll be late for the performance. Here, take this ticket and please come to the theater, Mr. Marlowe. I beg you. I'll pay you anything you ask. Only promise me you'll come.
Well, I...
Please.
Okay, Miss Ordway. I'll be there as soon as I can. Ballerina swept out of my apartment like a frightened whirlwind. As I got dressed all over again for an evening ballet, which I needed like acute appendicitis, I saw that the ticket she'd left was number 27J at the Great Arts Theater, showing Ballet of the World, sponsored by one Mrs. Imogene Wyatt. Well, I got to the lobby, half-soaked near the end of the second act, when an icy usherette shoved a program at me and hush-hushed me inside. The audience was a small cluster of arty diehards down front, which left me in 27J feeling like Midway Island. My client, Vivian Ordway, was the whole show. When I saw the finale coming, I slipped down a side aisle and into the wings, just in time to catch a beef at the stage door between a long, wolf-faced intruder and a pudgy doorman.
I ain't here, Scully Askew, but even if she was, you wouldn't get in. She left strict orders. You're finished. Now get out and stay out.
Okay, but let me tell you something. I broke my back getting publicity for that diamond-studded widow in this office. And the Jean Wire's going to be sorry she fired me. I'm going to see for it personally.
Get out of the theater, Scully.
You're nuts. You and this whole troop of stuck-up grasshoppers.
Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah.
Come this way to my dressing room.
Tell me, have you heard from Andre Ledoux, Vivian?
No, nothing. But I did remember something that may help.
Oh?
Andre once mentioned that he had a friend here in Los Angeles, a Mr. Baker who lived at the Winthrop Arms, the Winthrop Hotel, the Winthrop something.
Uh-huh.
Come in, Mr. Marlowe.
Thank you.
Andre may be there. I'm grasping at straws, I know. But If his mind is gone and he's lost. Oh, I'm so afraid for him.
Oh, now take it easy, honey. Take it easy.
Vivian, is there news of Andre?
Oh, no, George, nothing. Mr. Marlowe here is going to find him for us. He's a private detective.
Oh, I see. Wonderful. I am George Melnikov.
Glad to know you.
Vivian, I'll be at the hotel. If I can help, please do call on me. And, oh, my dear, you shone as beautifully tonight as the full moon. Как красивая луна. We mere stars were hardly visible beside you. До свидания, душа.
Fast man with a compliment, huh?
He's very sweet.
Yeah, what hotel did he mean?
The Wilshire Gardens, most of the ballet stayed there.
Oh. How about you, Miss Ordway?
I have a house, a studio on Lookout Mountain, 857.
857. Yeah. Can I reach you there?
No, I'm going to wait here in the theater. If Andre should remember and come back, I'd want to be here. He's a very sick man.
After I left the theater, a quick check in a phone book showed a Winthrop Arms apartment hotel on Havenhurst Drive. It's just below Fountain Avenue. And when I got there, I found the name Baker stuck over the mailbox to apartment 1A. I went inside and up to the door.
Yes?
Andre Ledoux?
What do you want?
Well, your friends at the theater are worried about you.
My friends? I have no friends.
George Melnikov's worried about you.
George Melnikov, my friend, worried.
So is Vivian Ordway.
Vivian?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that dear child, what will become of her now?
Well, what do you mean? What's happened?
Who are you?
Miss Ordway sent me to find you. She's waiting for you at the theater.
Waiting at the theater? Why? Why? The ballet is finished.
What's that?
Mrs. Imogen Wyatt withdraws her support completely. There is no more Ballet du Monde. I'm penniless. And all our work has been for nothing. I tried to reason with her, but... Oh, it was hateful. Afterward, I drove here in the dark street. The rain slashing, clawing at me. Rain.
Andre, where's your friend, Mr. Baker?
Mm-hmm.
This place is packed in mothballs.
Oh, he is in Europe. It is all right that I am here. He sent me the keys long ago, said I could use his apartment and his car. I came here to be alone, to think. My head aches.
Andre, what time was it when you left Mrs. Wyatt yesterday? Do you remember?
I can't remember. Only that it was dark, very dark, and it was such a difficult drive. Yes. Tomorrow she will notify her lawyer to alter the papers and order that embassy. I wish she were dead. You hear me? I wish that Imogen Wyatt were dead. What was that?
Stay where you are.
What is it? Do you see anything?
No. Now look, Andre, about your headache.
Hmm?
Wouldn't you like to see a doctor?
Doctor? No, I'll be all right. I am all right, understand?
Yes, sure. Well, do me a favor for your own sake. Stay here tonight, inside. I want to check a couple of things, and then I'll be back.
Yes, I'll stay. Where else would I go now?
I left, I was convinced that if the ballet impresario hadn't already slipped his trolley, another slight bump would do it. But two things bothered me. So first I walked around to the window again, but any trace of an eavesdropper had been washed away by the rain. Item number two was the strong imprint the drive home in the rain had made on Andre's troubled mind. I wanted to know why. The garage was under the building on the far side. The door was unlocked and a small light burned in the back. I finally found the car, a sleek, close-to-the-ground Hudson registered to Orland Baker, and found it with the first grim discrepancy. The left headlight and fender were still streaked with rain marks, but the right had been wiped clean. When I reached in and switched on the lights, that cinched it. The glass in the right headlight had been replaced. It was brand new.
Hey, Dan. What are you up to?
Just testing my friend's car. I may borrow it. You the attendant?
That's right. You in here last night tinkering around with this here car?
No. Maybe it was Mr. Ledoux. He had it out last night.
Oh, no, it wasn't him. That was somebody else. I heard a noise. See him when I come out of my back room. This guy beat it. He took off like a scared turkey. They had a big black cape on with a high collar flapping in the wind.
You better watch it, old-timer. That stuff's getting your eyesight.
Looked like a cape to me. Well, I looked around, but I didn't see no harm done, so I went back to my room.
What time was all this?
Oh, way past midnight. Maybe 1, 2 o'clock. I didn't pay much attention. By the way, Mr. Careful of Nip.
No, thanks. I'd like to use a phone. You got one?
Oh, sure. Back in the corner. I'll show you.
I'll find it. The call is personal. Do you mind?
Me? Just say not. Help yourself, Sonny. I'm too old to even be curious.
My first call was to a desk sergeant in the police traffic bureau. When I identified myself and asked about a hit-and-run accident, possibly on Fountain, sometime before midnight yesterday, there was a pause while he checked the record. And then...
On the button, Mr. Marlowe. We identified him by his Blue Shield medical card.
Oh?
One Lyle Kretschauer.
Uh-huh.
Apparently stepped out from between parked cars on Fountain Avenue between Orange Drive and Roxbury. Was struck by an unidentified vehicle at about 11:10 last night. Condition serious. Now, what do you know about this, Mr. Marlowe?
I'll get in touch with you later, Sergeant. Thanks. Stepped out from between parked cars.
Great, that's the end.
It's Philip Marlowe. I want to talk to Vivian Ordway.
Oh, hang on a second, Mr. Marlowe. She's right here.
Okay.
Have you found him? Is Andre all right?
Yeah, for the present. But listen, Vivian, I got to talk to Imogene Wyatt. Where does she live?
Oh, Mrs. Wyatt.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills. 21 Cami Hotel.
21 Cami. Meet me there right away, will you? I may have a couple of rough answers for you, baby.
But I'm still in costume.
That doesn't matter.
All right, I put something on over it. I'll be there just as soon as I can.
Between slick streets and visibility zeroed was a solid half-hour drive from the Winthrop Arms out to the swank Cameo Terrace. But when I pulled up at number 21, I wondered what the wealthy widow had spent her money on. The house was so small, it must have been shingled with $20 bills to meet the zoning restrictions. I just started up the soggy gravel path toward the door when it came. As I started to run for the house, a green convertible I hadn't noticed before roared to life suddenly and disappeared down a side street. But I didn't have time to worry about it. Inside, I found Mrs. Wyatt on the dining room floor, fighting a losing battle with the distance to the telephone.
I was going to ruin it all. Now, Andre let the movie.
She was dead. I looked through the rest of the small and now silent house in a hurry, but found nothing more constructive than the rear door wide open. I got back to the living room just in time to see my client, Vivian Ordway, bizarre in a short, frothy ballet skirt and long white hose, standing in the front door.
Something's wrong, isn't it?
It's one way to put it. How'd you get here, Vivian?
In the cab.
What do you know that drives a green convertible?
A green? With Scully Haskell, a publicity man, but why?
The guy I saw in a beef at the theater tonight.
What's happened?
Imogene Wyatt was just shot to death. And that puts two items of business up on deck. First, a check call to Andre Ledoux.
Andre? Why Andre?
On the off chance that he can drive faster than I can. After that, a personal call on Mr. Haskell. You can fill that one in yourself.
Marlowe, Andre couldn't have. He couldn't have.
We'll see. Now hang on tight, baby. Let's get it over with.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, the great international comedian Beatrice Lilly will be Bing Crosby's guest on CBS this Wednesday night. The CBS Bing Crosby Show always guarantees enjoyment. So be listening when B. Lilly joins Bing on most of these same CBS stations this Wednesday night. And now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The High-Colored Cape.
made a cockeyed picture. A beautiful ballerina miles away from the stage, yet in full color-drenched costume and gaping through tear-streaked grease paint. Sudden death. It's a good time for me to start checking up. Andre Ledoux, the high-strung impresario, was first. If he was still at the apartment, I could cross him off as having done it personally. Sorry, wrong number.
Marlowe, he was home, wasn't he, Andre? I mean, you couldn't suspect him, Marlowe. Why, Andre's the sweetest man in the world.
Take it easy, honey. I didn't say Ledoux did it. And his being home doesn't say he didn't. People sometimes pay other people to do their dirty work for him, you know.
Just what are you trying to say?
You hired me to find Ledoux, and I did. But also, I found he was suffering from shock and has been since last night when Mrs. Wyatt told him she was going to fold the show.
Fold the show?
Yeah, yeah. That Vivian would ruin him.
And half a dozen more I could name.
You're so right, so you've all got plenty of motive.
But what about Haskell? We know he hated Mrs. Wyatt. Isn't revenge motive? Revenge and the fact that you saw his car. Why do you insist on defending him?
I don't. Only there's another angle. Called hit and run. And I know that it ties in tight with Ledoux, Mrs. Wyatt, and the actual killer.
Hit and run? I don't understand.
Well, neither do I yet. Now, look, do you know where Scully Haskell lives?
No.
Where does he hang out?
Sometimes at the bar at Wilshire Gardens Hotel.
Okay, I'll try it. You go back to your place up in the hills. I'll find it when I got some answers. Now, hurry up and get out of here, will you? Somebody might have heard the shot and called it. Somebody did hear the shot. Go on, get out.
Yes, but Marlon.
No, but. Go on, Vivian. Get in the cab and go straight home. Do your crying there.
All right.
Good. I'm trying to. Hey, Vivian, you forgot your coat. Vivian, you. Oh, no, baby. You forgot your cape. For a long second, I just held it tight and stared. High Elizabethan collar, enough gathered cloth to rig old Ironsides. It could have been what the garage attendant thought he had seen running away from the car Ledoux had used. But the garage attendant could have been mistaken, too. I told myself that leaping high to conclusions was strictly for ballet dancers. I jammed the cape into a small bundle and leapt via the service entrance just as the police sirened up. I took the great circle route back to my car, tossed the cape on the seat next to me, and drove fast to the bar at the Wilshire Gardens Hotel. It was a kind of flattering pink-mirrored place where the hors d'oeuvre had long ago replaced the pretzel. But Haskell wasn't in sight. And the only person around who could possibly be of any help to me was the delicate George Millikoff.
Mr. Marlowe, have you seen Vivian? I am beside myself with worry.
She's all right, Millikoff.
She's not. I know. It is Monsieur Ledoux that she still worries about him.
Yeah, him and a little bit more, George. Now tell me, you know where I can find Scully Haskell?
Why, yes, I do. He was just here for a drink.
Where'd he go?
You're being very brusque, Mr. Marlowe.
Being very what?
You're brusque.
Yeah, well. Now look, George, without grand jetting out of your satin loafers, get this. There's been a murder, and Vivian's in it up to her pretty fluff skirt.
A murder? How is Vivian concerned?
Come on, Butch. Let's get out of here.
Where are we going, Mr. Marlowe?
Out to my car where we can talk. The rain stopped. Come on. Over here.
You said somebody was murdered. Who was that?
Mrs. Wyatt. She was shot, and it might have been Haskell.
Because she discharged him?
Maybe. Or maybe something more complicated, like a hit-and-run accident that belongs to Ledoux, but somebody wants to cover. Make any sense to you? Here's the car.
No. Should it?
No. What's more, it shouldn't to Vivian, either.
What are you getting at?
There isn't time to explain. Call it thinking out loud. Thinking about this cape, for example, that belongs to Vivian. And about the testimony of a whiskied garage attendant. All of which makes me hope real hard that Haskell's the boy.
More thinking out loud?
Yeah, maybe. Now, look, where can I find Haskell?
The Paradise Court Motel on Vine. He has a bungalow there. Number 3.
Oh, thanks. Well, if you're really worried about Vivian, George, go on up to a place on Lookout Mountain Road. She's not in good shape. Here, take this cape with you.
What? Why, you cut yourself. Your finger's bleeding.
Yeah. And a sliver of glass, George. Glass that could have come from a broken headlight, huh?
From a broken what? What are you talking about, Mr. Marlowe?
The benefit of the doubt, George. Keeps getting harder to give it away. Bring this back to Vivian, will you? Tell her she left it at Mrs. Wyatt's and that I'm positive Haskell's our man. So long, George.
That you, Nancy?
Not quite. The name's Marlowe. I want to talk to you, Haskell.
Don't waste your breath, Skip Chaser. I'm broke, and I'm going to stay broke until the first of next month. After that, you can get in line. Who are you funny for, the finance company?
Imogene Wyatt's dead, Haskell.
What did you say it? What's a gun for?
Your lousy temper. Get back.
Hey, wait a minute. I saw you at the theater tonight.
And I heard you, which puts me out in front. Now, do we talk, Haskell?
About what?
Mrs. Wyatt's murder. You were sloppy.
And you're off your nut. I didn't shoot her. I didn't even...
Slips, huh, kid?
Oh, I know she was shot. Doesn't prove I did it.
Come on, why'd you kill Mrs. Wyatt?
I didn't.
How'd you know she was shot?
Because it happened just as I got out of my car and started toward her place. I was going up there to read her off. The shot scared me away. Use your head, Marlowe. I was sore, but I didn't kill her.
No, but interference on that hit and run you were covering was plenty of reason.
What are you talking about, hit and run?
Hit and run! Don't move, Haskell.
Nuts.
Come I on said in, don't I... move!
Congratulations, handsome. That's just what I had in mind.
Close the door and stand still.
Sure. Now what? The name's Nancy Connor.
Occupation?
Ex-friend of the unconscious. Don't look so worried, handsome. I'm on your side. I had something in mind exactly like that left cross you just threw. South Coast, huh?
Yeah. What's your beef?
I took this louse to a party with me last night, and he got so stinking drunk that I'm still apologizing to people.
He was with you last night?
Mm-hmm. Me and a couple of fifths of bourbon. From 8:30 till 5 a.m. And I'm Malibu.
He never left?
Not for a second. The loudmouth was positive. Nobody could get along without him. What's that got to do with you?
Too much. Tell Haskell I'll be in touch, will you? I gotta run now.
What are you looking at? Just a program from the ballet, isn't it?
Hmm? Yeah.
Oh, Haskell has them all over the place, after all.
Yeah, sure.
So?
Hmm? Oh, so like I said, Nancy, I gotta run. It was 15 stop-and-go minutes from Haskell's place to the Hollywood Hills, and another 5 screeching up the paved snake that was Lookout Mountain Road. Finally, I was there out of my car and running toward number 857, which was a collection of windows in a rustic log frame half jutting out into space. And around in the back, there was a wooden sun deck. Below it, on either side, huge rocks that lined the edge of the cliff. Directly below, only the dark, bottomless canyon. On the end of the porch near me, there was a long flight of stairs. And I started up, one careful, noiseless step at a time. My hand tight around the 38. Suddenly, in the weak light of the thin slice of moon, I saw Vivian Ordway. A back to the flimsy porch rail, a face, an ugly knot of terror.
Oh, George.
And only inches away from her and brandishing the gun he used to kill Mrs. Wyatt.
Listen.
Was the half-crazed answer to everything.
Listen.
A delicate jaw.
Please.
Melikoff.
It's too late, Vivian. Marlowe knows this cape was what the garage attendant saw. And do you know how? Because of a stupid little thing. A sliver of glass that was caught in it, which came from the broken headlights that the wearer of the cape replaced. The wearer, who was covering up André Ledoux's hit-and-run accident, saw that he could have the pig where he wanted him.
You're wrong, George. Marlowe was after Haskell. He thinks Haskell killed Mrs. Wyatt.
He only hopes that. And he'll find out one way or another that the beautiful ballerina is guilty. Then he'll be forced to come back here after you.
But, George, I'm not guilty!
Of course you're not, Vivian. I am. The cape is mine, not yours. You only used it tonight. That's the only thing he doesn't know, and never will. Because you will have killed yourself after confessing to me.
No.
It's the only way, Vivian. You or me. But it's always been that way, hasn't it? Even in the ballet, where one or the other of us had to be stars. Too bad it wasn't I.
Yeah, crying shame, Malachi. Get away from that rail, Vivian.
He's going to the other end of the porch, Milo. He's going to jump with the ground there.
Malachi, no!
Oh, no.
Too great a leap. Even for a ballet dancer. Let's get out of here. Long time at police headquarters, but finally all concerned had made their statement. The law was more or less satisfied, and André Ledoux never knew he'd hit anyone, was cleared of hit and run.
That left me and the ballerina driving to a friend's house where she was going to spend the night.
Phil, I know you must have had enough of questions and answers, but...
But?
Yes. The reason George killed Mrs. Wyatt, hmm?
Well, you see, Vivian, it started last night when George went to see Andre Ledoux because he was so bitter about his part in the show being cut down. And that was when he saw Andre returning from Mrs. Wyatt, shaken up and half dazed.
And with a broken headlight and other signs of having hit someone, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And from there, George thought fast, covered it all up, found out exactly what had happened from this morning's paper, probably, and waited.
Ah.
But when you hired me tonight, he must have followed me to Ledoux's and overheard Andre tell me that Mrs. Wyatt was going to pull out.
Oh, so he went to her, tried to stop her, and couldn't. Hmm?
Yeah. Anything else?
Oh, yes. Oh, one thing. Oh, that's the house bell, Phil, did the white.
Oh, okay.
What made you hurry back to my place from Haskell's motel when time meant so much?
A hunch, honey. As I was leaving Scully Haskell's, I saw a stack of ballet programs on a table in his living room. The cover on it was very interesting. It features you and a picture of George, majestic in his high-collared cape.
That was it.
Yeah, that was it.
Good night, please. Oh, will you call me tomorrow sometime, please?
I'll call you tomorrow, Vivian.
Good. It's a nice night, Phil. It's so good to be alive. Well... Good night.
Well, I drove straight home in the quiet, empty hours through the quiet, empty streets, thinking all the way about ballet, which to me had always been something very delicate. You know, for the long hair, strictly the arty side. And I thought about the people I'd met who were connected with it. Ballerina with a lot of courage when courage counted. The high-strung Andre Ledoux, Haskell the muscle man, and George. As vicious as anything I'd ever met on Skid Row. And I was still thinking about them when I got out of my car. But then for the first time I noticed a little white envelope on the seat next to me. It had my name on it. And inside was a ticket for tomorrow's matinee. Same seat I had before. Yeah, well, I figured I'd go. You know, those leaps they do. They're pretty good. What do you call them? Yeah, they're pretty good.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in our cast were Georgia Ellis, Edgar Berrier, Elliot Reed, Lou Krugman, Wilms Herbert, and Michael Ann Barrett. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time it was a fishy horseplay from a red-headed beauty wild about ponies past a black-bearded sailor who bled to death on a racing form to a neck-and-neck finish over a wandering seahorse worth $50,000. And you know what? I was the jockey.
Remember, every Wednesday night, CBS brings you Groucho Marx with his wonderful quiz, You Bet Your Life. It's one of the brightest, most spontaneous, most genuinely funny shows on the air, so be listening this Wednesday night on CBS. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Pursuit, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where Burns and Allen are heard every Wednesday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System. This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell about another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And say, I want to ask you if you've sent in for that little present we've got for you. You know, that swell recipe calendar? It's free, of course, and it's really something. It's a two-year calendar for 1945 and 46, and it's beautifully done in full color. But the best part of it is that it's jammed with recipes and ideas for cooking with Petri wine. Send for your free recipe calendar tonight. Just send your name and address to Petri Wine, P-E-T-R-I, Petri Wine, San Francisco, 26, California. San Francisco, 26, California. The requests for this swell calendar have been coming in so fast that you better hurry up and get yours before we get snowed under. Write tonight, and we'll send you your free recipe calendar at once. And now for our weekly visit with the good Dr. Watson. Let's see if he's waiting for us.
Good evening, Mr. Fox.
Oh, good evening, Doctor. Playing the phonograph, I see.
Yes, my boy. And that particular melody has some very potent memories for me. Here, I'll turn the thing off. You haven't come here to listen to a Mozart sonata. You want a story, don't you, young fellow?
That's right, Doctor.
Well, let's sit down.
All right.
That's better. Now I'll tell you what.
Oh, thank you, Doctor.
Began in Vienna in 1889, many, many years before the insane house painter named Schicklgruber had converted that gay city into a place of fear and oppression.
And what were you and Sherlock Holmes doing there, Doctor? Just taking a trip?
Mr. Foreman, in those early days of our association, we didn't have the time or the money for just taking trips. No. We were in Vienna because Holmes had been engaged in certain highly important investigations. We were staying in a charming little pension inhabited by students and musicians. And on the night the story began, we'd finished dinner and had returned to our room. I was busy making some notes on the investigation we'd just concluded. And Holmes was scraping away at his beloved violin.
Confound it. What's wrong? Why can't I get it?
Oh, it sounds very pretty to me.
Pretty, really, old chap. I'm an amateur. Huh? A heavy-fingered one at that. Listen to this. Sounds like a fiddler at an Irish wake.
Oh, take it easy, Holmes. Take it easy. There's no need to fling the violin down like that.
What's an old chap? Why, with all your other excellent qualities, are you not a pianist?
What's a piano got to do with it?
In this case, everything. There's a piano in this room, and if you could play it, the Mozart sonata I'm struggling with might have some meaning. Come in.
Oh,
good evening, Fräulein. Wish to see me?
You are Herr Sherlock Holmes.
That is my name.
Then, ja, wish to see you. I am Leo Uhlenstein. I live here in this pension.
How do you do? This is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, Herr Doctor?
I'm glad to meet you, my dear.
Fräulein Uhlenstein, may I pay my tribute to the brilliance of your piano playing? You have the exact precision of phrasing that Mozart demands.
How do you know of me?
Both Dr. Watson and I were present at the command performance you gave at the Imperial Court a fortnight ago.
Curious, I knew I'd seen you somewhere before. My friend was just expressing the need of a pianist as you walked in, young lady. Perhaps the
two
of you...
Oh, I'm sorry. I do not play with amateurs.
Amateurs? Well, really...
I do not mean to be rude. It's just that my life is dedicated to my professional career.
I quite understand, Fräulein. And now please tell me, what can I do to help you? I must presume you have come to see me in my professional capacity.
Jawohl. That is correct, Herr Holmes. Though I realize to a great detective like you, my problem must seem quite trivial. I am being blackmailed by a man in this pension. He is Sándor Arpádi, a Hungarian painter who lives in the studio upstairs.
Sándor Arpádi? Yes, I think I've heard of him.
Since 2 months now, ever since he knew my secret, he's come to me for money and... Today, he told me he must have 250 gulden, or he will go to the police. I have not that much money. Herr Holmes, please to tell me what I shall do.
Just what hold does he have over you?
My brother, Karl, he got into some trouble here, and the police were looking for him, but he ran away to München, as you say, Munich, and Sander Arpady knew of this. He was a friend of mine, so I thought. When this trouble came on my brother, I turned to Sandor for help. He smuggled Karl out of the country, and he turned on me for blackmail. He's a bad man. I wish he was dead.
Most blackmailers are cowards at heart. I think Dr. Watson and I will call on the gentleman. By the way, does he have any written evidence of your brother's crime?
Yeah, he has his address in Munich. I show Sandor a letter from him when he first go there, and keep the letter. They'll not give it back to me.
And if he gave the police your brother's address, they'd arrest him, eh?
They would, of course. Herr Holmes, are you please to tell me what I should do? I cannot go on this way. My music
now,
is...
Now, Fräulein, simply... calm yourself. I should be most happy to help you, and if you will lead the way, we'll see how persuasive we can be with Sandor Apadi.
Studio, Herr Holmes, at the end of the corridor.
I see. Now, remember, young lady, you'd better let me do most of the talking.
He must be out.
That is possible.
Ah, locked. I think, bearing in mind our party's profession, we'll take the liberty of opening his door.
That doesn't look a very complicated lock to me.
No, I think this skeleton key will do the trick.
It's very dangerous, Herr Holmes. If Sandor finds you,
No. Don't you worry about that, Fräulein. We're perfectly capable of taking care of ourselves.
Uh-huh. There we are. Close the door behind you, will you, Watson?
Can't see a thing. I'll strike a match.
Quick,
Carter, look at him. Thumped over his desk.
Light the gas, will you, Watson?
Right, you are home. There.
Judging from his appearance, Fräulein Ullenstein, I think Sandor Apadi had other enemies besides yourself. Less scrupulous enemies.
He's been strangled. Look at the finger marks on his throat.
Is he?
Yes. His body is still warm, though. I'm afraid he's dead.
I am glad. He was a bad man. Deserved to die.
Watson, do you notice that the fingers of the killer have broken the skin and drawn blood?
Yes, sir.
Should we not communicate with the police?
Before we do that, Fräulein, we must see if we can find your brother's letter. Help me move the body, will you, Watson? Lying across an open dispatch box that might contain the document in question.
Right, John.
Come on, Buffalo. That's it. Well, a painter, the late Mr. Apadi, was an unusually methodical man. Everything filed here in alphabetical order. Here we are. You, Fräulein Lea Ullenstein. And the letter has the Munich postmark. I think this must be the document in question. Will you examine it, please, Fräulein?
Yeah, this is the letter. Herr Holmes, how can I thank you?
There's very little to thank me for. If the blackmailer were still alive, I fear it wouldn't have been so simple a matter. I wonder what other treasures this box contains. Hello. Hello.
What is it, huh?
Interesting. Extremely interesting. Look at this, old fellow.
Good Lord. Information on the case that we've just been working
exactly.
on.
Exactly, and from the names attached to the document, I think we may assume that the dead man did not confine his blackmailing to struggling young pianists. He was after big game, too.
Yes, we'd better be careful, Holmes. I don't think that we should go for the police just yet.
No. We'll start by having a little talk with the other residents of this pension. Fräulein, who lives in the room adjoining this one?
I do, Herr Holmes.
And the room across the landing?
Lai Tung Fo, the great Chinese actor. He's performing here in Vienna.
I see. Then I think we'll start by calling on him. Return to your room, Fräulein, and we will let you know later what we've found. In the meantime, say nothing to anyone of what has happened.
I'll do everything you tell me, Herr Holmes. And please, once again, please let me thank you for what you've done for me.
You know, Holmes, I'm not sure that girl didn't strangle Apardi herself. A pianist would have unusual strength in her fingers. And we know that she had the motive. Look how naturally calm she was when she realized the man was dead.
I disagree with you, old fellow.
Huh?
I think what you refer to as unnatural calmness is really the cold detachment of the two artists.
Well, I have a feeling that we should keep an eye on her, just the same.
We will, Watson, we will. And now I suggest we pay a visit across the landing to the distinguished Chinese actor, Mr. Ling Tu Fo.
Yes, please. You wish to see me?
If you could spare us a moment, sir.
But of course, gentlemen. Please to come in.
My name is Sherlock Holmes. This is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
I am greatly flattered to meet you. You are not here to see me in your professional capacity, I hope, Mr. Holmes?
Oh, no, not exactly. I just wanted to ask you a few questions.
Please, to ask me anything.
Do you know Chandor Apadi, the painter who lives across the hall?
I know him by sight. We nod to each other on the stairs. Nothing more.
I see. Have you been in your room most of the evening, may I ask?
But yes, I have been sitting here quietly for the past few hours, reading over the Analects of Confucius.
May I ask, sir, whether you heard any unusual noises this evening? Sounds of a struggle or a cry from the direction of Sandor Pardi's room, for instance?
I do not think so. Wait, yes, yes. I think I did hear laced voices in there and the sound of a cry.
About how long ago was this?
Oh, an hour ago, perhaps more. Is anything wrong? Has the trouble come to Chandor?
Chandor? I thought you said you had only a nodding acquaintance with the gentleman.
Well, he is a well-known artist. It is only natural I should call him by his false name, Mr. Holmes, even though I do not know him. Has something happened to him?
I'm afraid so, but I can't tell you any more about it at the moment. Thank you for your cooperation. We shall see you again, no doubt. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
That fellow wasn't telling us the truth, you know, Holmes. He seemed very shifty to me. Well, where are we going now?
Downstairs to the porter's desk. There's only one entrance to this house, you'll remember. The porter may be able to tell us of any unusual comings and goings in the last hour or two. Come on, old chap, don't dawdle. There's a great deal of work ahead of us.
Herr Holmes, what can I do for you?
How long have you been on duty tonight?
Since 5 o'clock.
Did you notice what people have come in or gone out since then?
No one has gone out.
Ah, splendid. And who came in?
Fräulein Ullenstein came in just after 6,
oh, yes.
And Herr Apadi, the painter, came in a few minutes later. That is all.
Who lives in the other ground floor apartments besides Dr. Watson and myself?
There are only two other apartments. In the one to the right of the corridor lives Madame Janssen. She's a Swedish lady, a sculptor.
And in the other?
Signora Violetti, the Italian opera singer.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm much obliged to you.
I'm happy to be of service, Herr Holmes.
Where are we off to now? Back to our rooms?
Oh, we'll call on Madame Violetti if she's at home.
It sounds as if she's very much at home.
Lacombe, that is a friend of a come to see me. Bravo! Bravissimo! I have so much wish to make your acquaintance. Sit down.
No, I'm afraid we can only stay for a moment, madam. My friend wanted to ask you a few questions.
Yes, signora. I just want to know...
I know your questions. Oh. You play the violin. I have heard you.
Yes.
You want to know whether the great Valeria will allow you to accompany her in a magnificent soprano aria, allo so from Mozart's Il Flauto Magico. Violetti's answer to your question is sì, sì.
Yes, madam. Excuse me, signora, but if you don't mind... But that was not one of my questions.
It was not. But I will sing it with you just this day.
You flatter me, but at the moment there are other things on my mind. Signora Violetti, do you know Chandor Apadi?
By his side, that is all. He makes eyes at me, but I no pay attention. I do not like ungallant.
You haven't seen him this evening?
No. I have been alone, reviewing the score at La Traviata. I am to sing it next week here in Vienna. I hope you will both be present. It would be a great treat for you.
I'm sure it would be, signora. Now, if you'll excuse us.
Oh, it is sad you must go so soon. But come and see me again, and I will sing for you both before you leave Vienna.
Great Scott, with a ghastly woman. She's not your murderess, I'm sure. And now I suppose we'll have to question this scalpless woman. And then we'll talk to everyone in the house.
No, I think before we visit her, we'll examine the dead man's room a little more closely. That black tin dispatch box may hold the key to this mystery.
Idiot. Numbskull.
I think I go through these papers thoroughly at first.
Tell an interesting story. A party had obviously been blackmailing Madame Janssen, the sculptor.
Yes, and also our friend, the Chinese actor, Lai Tung Fo.
Then Lai Tung Fo was lying when he said that he didn't know Apardi.
Obviously.
By George, three of the four people living in this house in his power.
Hello.
What's the matter? What have you found?
Footprints in the cigar ash on the carpet. Prints of a small foot, leading us to this closet.
Somebody must have been hiding in there.
Huh? Possibly. Uh-huh. Take a look at these, Watson.
And hair. Long black hair. Where were they?
On a hook in the cupboard. Someone bracing themselves back so as to be out of sight could easily leave such evidence.
I've got it, Holmes. I've got it. The long black hair, the long nails that caused the peculiar marks on a party's throat, and a small footprint. It was a woman.
Possibly, but which one? Fräulein Ullenstein and Signora Violetti both have blonde hair, remember?
And it must be that sculptress woman.
Not necessarily. Who else, not a woman, might have small feet, long nails, and long black hair?
By Jove, the Chinese actress.
Come on.
I hope he's still there.
Come on, sir. Come on. Let's go in.
Holmes. Look at him. He's praying. His head's in his hands.
Oh, my dear fellow, I'm afraid prayers can do him no good now. He's been strangled. Strangled with his own cue.
Dr. Watson's story will continue in just a second, so I'm going to take that second for a fast question. I know you've probably tasted port wine, but have you ever tasted Petri California port? Have you? Because if you haven't tried Petri port, well, you can just tell yourself right now you don't know how good a port can be. Petri port is rich, red, and hearty. But what you want to know is, how does it taste? The answer to that is short and sweet. The taste is terrific. And say, Petri California Muscatel is on the terrific side, too. Petri Muscatel has the flavor and fragrance of real, juicy muscat grape. Mm-hmm. Both wines are perfect after dinner or anytime you're sitting around talking with your friend. Try them. They're great. They've got to be, because they're Petri. And now back to tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure. The famous pair are staying in Vienna, where they've become involved in the mysterious strangling of a notorious blackmailer. As we rejoin our story, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson are cross-questioning another of the suspects, a Swedish sculptress by the name of Madame Young.
What do you want with me? Why have you come in here?
Well, we just wanted to ask you a few questions, madam.
To admire your figurines. May I ask if you always work in clay?
Yeah, but what's that to you? Do you wish to buy some of my sculpture?
No, but I assure you the question was pertinent.
Tell me who you are and stop wasting my time.
My friend is a private detective, madam.
A detective? Who sent you here?
No one sent me here. I'm conducting an investigation of the murder of Sándor Apádi.
Sándor dead?
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm glad.
Yes, madam, but we happen to know that you had a motive for killing him. He'd been blackmailing you.
Get out of here. What right have you to come here and question me?
No. Look here, madam. If you know what's good for you, you will answer our question.
And if you know what's good for you, you'll get out of here, both of you.
Come along, Watson.
But, Holmes, you can't possibly...
Forgive me, madam, for our intrusion. We meant no rudeness.
You have been rude. Intolerably rude. Go away.
Whatever made you back down like that, Holmes? Obviously, she's the killer.
Rubbish.
But her hair was jet black.
Yes, but it was short hair. And didn't you notice the size of her feet? Anyway, she works in clay. If it had been Marble, I might have suspected her.
Upon my soul, Holmes, I wish you'd tell me what you're driving at.
I have the answer to these killings now, Watson. But I'll have to prove it. I'm afraid I must work without you, old chap. Would you mind waiting for me in our room? No. Wait a minute. That may be dangerous. Wait for me in Signora Violetti's room, if you don't mind. I'll join you there as soon as my work is done. Pretend that you have returned because you were so enchanted with her voice.
Oh, good Scott Holmes, you can't ask me to be alone with that dreadful woman.
Please do as I say, Watson, and don't question me. There isn't a moment to be lost.
That aria, my dear doctor.
No, madam, I'm afraid I don't.
You've not heard about great Giuseppe Verdi?
Well, I heard of him, of course, but I can't identify his work.
That was from a Rigoletto, you silly man.
Rigoletto?
Come, tell me your favorite composer. I will sing something of his just for you. I will turn the gaslight down.
No.
That will be so much more romantic. Now, who is your favorite composer?
Wagner's very fine, you know.
Wagner is a hobby like most German composers. But Violetti can master him.
Oh, Lord, here she goes again.
See it is. Come into the light.
Great heavens, the Chinese actor.
No! I am sorry to make commotion, but as we say in my country, those who return from grave speak with double knowledge.
Oh, you devil! You devil! I kill you once! I kill you once! I kill you again!
Thank you for the confession, Senora Violetti. You can testify to it, Watson.
Holmes!
No, you don't, Senora. Your nails are too sharp for my liking.
I'll kill you, the both of you! I'll kill you!
Catch her, Watson, catch her!
She's fainted, Holmes.
Fainted, eh? What an undramatic exit for a most dramatic lady.
Now that you've turned Signora Violetti over to the police, perhaps you'd tell me what made you certain that she was the murderer.
It was obvious from the beginning that Apari was strangled by someone with long fingernails. When Lai Tung Fo was killed, it ruled him out. Then who was the woman with a motive and long nails? Elementary, my dear fellow. Was the woman Fräulein Ullenstein? No. Being a concert pianist, her nails were naturally short. The sculptress who worked in clay? Again, no. That would make it impossible for her to mold her delicate figurines. Therefore, Signora Violetti, by the process of elimination, was the only woman with long nails.
But why did she strangle the Chinese actor, too?
Undoubtedly, he witnessed the first killing. The long black hairs in the closet were from his cue. I presume that later he threatened Signora Violetti, and so he himself was strangled.
I still don't understand why she strangled Apardi in the first place.
Dr. Watson, well, I think you'll find that he's been blackmailing her, too. Remember, he had documents incriminating everyone in the house except her. I think we may assume she killed him and then removed her own papers from the dispatch box. But I'd no proof, and so, well, I had to frighten her into confession.
So that's why you disguised yourself as Lai Tung Fu.
Yes, I borrowed the robes from his room. It was lucky that the lights were low as I entered. Yes. And it's also fortunate that to the average European, all Chinese look alike. Come in. Ah, Fräulein Ullenstein. We'll be coming in to see you in a few minutes.
I've been waiting so anxiously. Is everything all right?
Well, from your point of view, my dear young lady, yes.
There's nothing more for you to worry about.
Oh, I would like to repay you, Herr Holmes.
I've done very little for you, but if you really feel that you owe me something...
Yeah?
Well, perhaps just this once you wouldn't mind accompanying an amateur.
It would be a pleasure. What is it you wish me to play?
A Mozart sonata.
But of course. The rondo from the E-flat, I suppose.
Ah, that's splendid. Please, Fräulein.
You like Mozart, Herr Doctor?
Oh, very much, young lady. Very much. In fact, I I might say he is my favorite composer. Charming. Perfectly charming. I only wish that all our adventures could end so melodiously.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, A Case of Identity. Mr. Rathbone appears to the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce to the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. This is Bill Foreman saying goodnight for the Petrie family. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's it for Case Closed this week. You can find a lot more from Philip Marlowe, Sherlock Holmes, past episodes of this show, and everything else at RelicRadio.com. Shoutcast Stream is available there. Thousands of other old-time radio shows. And if you'd like to help support it all, our donate button. You can donate through the website. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts. Any amount is always appreciated. That's how we keep coming to you every week. Thanks, as always, to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with the Epic Casebook and Unit 99 on another episode of Case Closed.